the university was studying the difference in vocational perceptions. Just turn that on a second. The university was discussing studying the difference in vocational perceptions. Now, how people perceived things in their specific job. So they devised a short but succinct test. And the first person to be tested was an engineer. The researchers asked him, what does 2 plus 2 make? And the engineer simply said, well, in absolute terms, 4. Researchers made their notes, thanked him, sent him on his way. Then they called in an architect and asked him the same question. And his answer was this. He said, well, there are several possibilities. Oh, of course, 2 plus 2 makes 4, but so do 3 plus 1, and 2 plus 1.5, and 1.5. That also makes 4. So really, it's all a matter of choosing the right option. Said the researchers, made their notes, thanked him, sent him on his way. The final person to come in was a lawyer. And the researchers also asked him, what does 2 and 2 make? At this, the lawyer furtively looked round, asked if the door could be closed, leaned in close to the researchers and said, well, what would you like it to be? Lawyers get a bit of a bad name, don't they? You know, I mean, you go back to Shakespeare and Henry VI Part II, is it? That he has the line in it, let's kill all the lawyers. Which obviously is a popular line, because in Stratford you can find coasters and t-shirts and all sorts of things with that on. You can buy those sorts of things. But, you know, for generations, lawyers have not always had very good names. But recently, you know, bankers didn't have a very good name, did they, either? And let's be honest, you know, since time immemorial, clergy have been accused of being hypocrites. So, the thing is, it doesn't always follow that a respectable profession leads to a good reputation. But most of us do like to be well thought of, don't we? So if a good job doesn't guarantee that, then what will? What advice can we follow in order to be admired and respected? Let me introduce you to the Old Testament book of Proverbs. The book of Proverbs in the Bible is part of what's called wisdom literature. It does what it says on the tin. Specifically helps the reader to be wise. And Proverbs chapter 9 verse 10 reminds us that the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. So real wisdom is about knowing God, living out life in a manner that understands and knows and respects and worships God for who he is. At first, the book of Proverbs, it can seem to be a little bit disjointed if you read through it. It's not like reading sort of, you know, the history books or the Psalms even, or the Gospels or the Epistles. It seems quite disjointed, quite sort of bitty. But actually, it's a collection of short and pithy sayings. I want you to think of it like this. Imagine you're going for a night out in the theatre. Okay, you're going to go to a night out. You want something light. It's been the pandemic. You don't really want to go and see something really, really sort of heavy going. You want something nice and light. So, you've got a choice. You can go to the theatre and you could go and see something like... have you seen The Play That Goes Wrong? Very popular play, been in London and toured around the country. Very good, very, very funny, very funny. But it's sort of 2 hours, sort of standard sort of play, interval in the middle, and very, you know, beginning, middle, end, that sort of thing. Proverbs is not like that at all. Proverbs is like going to the comedy store, the club in London, and going and seeing a comedian like Tim Vine. Do you know Tim Vine? And seeing him perform. Because Tim Vine performs like this. Okay, if you went to a Tim Vine concert, it would be a bit like a show. I phoned the local gym and asked if they could teach me how to do the splits. He said, how flexible are you? I said, I can't make Tuesdays. He said, I'm going to chop off the bottom of one of your trouser legs and put it in the library. I thought, that's a turn up for the books. You know, somebody actually complimented me on my driving today. They left a little note on my windscreen. It said, parking, fine. I thought that was nice. So, I went down to my local ice cream shop. I said, I want to buy an ice cream. He said, hundreds and thousands. I said, I'll start with just one, thank you. And you kind of think, well, those are great. Those are really funny. Now, hang on. What? I've forgotten the first one already. They're short, sharp, pithy, boom, 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 jokes. And the book of Proverbs is like that. But the great thing about Proverbs is it's written down for us. So we won't forget them. We can refer back to them again and again and again. But that's how the book of Proverbs is sort of written. And today, in our verses that have been put together by the lectionary, we're invited to think a little bit about our reputation, because verse 1 of chapter 22 begins, "A good name is more desirable than great riches. To be esteemed is better than silver or gold." And we know that's true, don't we? We know that you can't buy a good reputation. You can't purchase high esteem. You know, it might be possible for us throughout our lives to gain large amounts of money. But if we're unpleasant and argumentative or manipulative as a person, then wealth won't really change the way that people see us or fundamentally think about us. But as we've established, most of us like to be well thought of. So, how can we do that? Well, let's take a step back. Verse 2 reminds us that rich and poor have this in common. The Lord is the maker of them all. That's the baseline for humanity. I don't know, were you ever sort of given the advice when you were going to a job interview by somebody? Just imagine the interview panel in their underwear. No, that's probably a good thing actually. But the basic point of it is that when all is stripped away, the intimidating interviewer is no different to the trembling interviewee. And that's really what we're reminded of here. Vicar, congregation, lord of the manor, long-term unemployed, all of us are simply the creation of God. And when we all think of ourselves like that, well then it reminds us to be humble. Some people talk about themselves being, you know, self-made. No, fundamentally you're not. None of us are. We're made by God. We're created by Him. And we played no part in the journey from being single cell to newborn baby. From Bill Gates and Jeff Bezos to the woman outside Waitrose who sells The Big Issue. All of us have been lovingly made by God. If we remember that, if we hold on to the truth that we're all made by God, then first of all, it humbles us. It reminds us that we're no greater or less than anyone else. We can't look down on anyone because we're all God's creation, all in His image. But then it also raises the big question. At the end of the day, who is it that we're actually trying to impress? Who do we want to have a good reputation with? Is it the creation or is it the creator? Because most of the time we tend to spend trying to have a good impression with the creation, with the people around us that God has created, rather than thinking about having a good reputation with God our creator. But remember, the book of Proverbs tells us that the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. Rather than seeking the approval of people created by God, we would do much better to actually focus our energies on seeking the approval of God Himself. First and foremost, when we think about who we'd like to be thinking good of us, thinking well of us, having a high opinion of us, it should be God, shouldn't it? To have a good reputation in God's eyes, because He's our Creator God. But what does that sort of reputation look like? Some people would suggest that would spill over into how the world sees us. Well, for a start, God is impressed when we remember that He has lovingly created everyone. And therefore, when we treat everyone with respect, verses 8 to 9, draw that out. Whoever sows injustice reaps calamity, and the rod they wield in fury will be broken. The generous will find themselves blessed, for they share their food with the poor. See, when we care about what God cares about, when we care about who God cares about, rather than caring what others think about us, then we change our whole focus. We want to start helping the poor and the needy and the disadvantaged and the oppressed, because they're made in God's image, and if we don't stand up for them, they don't have those to help them or stand up for them. And then when we do that, God will approve of our actions and bless us. That's what those two verses say. But conversely, when we act against those others, when we take advantage of people, when we become the oppressor, when we allow our anger against others to bring them down, then the warning is quite clear. If we sow injustice, God will see to it that we ultimately reap calamity. Our weapons of oppression and fury will be broken by God, and we'll reap calamity. And verses 22 and 23 spell out that it's God Himself that we're failing to impress if we behave selfishly or vindictively. Do not exploit the poor because they're poor. It's so easy, isn't it, to exploit the poor? What are they going to do? How are they going to fight back? and do not crush the needy in court. Why not? What are they going to do about it? We've got all the power. Don't do it, says God. For the Lord will take up their case. That's who will fight for them. That's who will champion them. And will exact life for life. Well, of course, we would never do anything like that, would we? Or would we? Do our lifestyle choices ever come at a cost to others? Are there individuals and communities in this country or other parts of the world who suffer because of what we choose to buy or where we choose to go on holiday or how we choose to invest our money? We're starting to see the impacts of climate change in our society, in the Western world. But of course it's been impacting poorer communities around the world for decades. We're starting to reap the calamity that we've sown in our injustice. And then are there people closer to home, people we try to humiliate or score points over because we feel we've got the advantage of power in some form, crushing the needy in court, as it were? Well, God says, beware, you won't get away with that. He will take up the case of all those people. And if we try to destroy their life, deliberately or unthinkingly and uncaringly, we will reap what we sow. We will be dealt with according to how we've dealt with others. Our comfortable existence will cease. You see, our reputation before God will mark us out as either someone who follows Jesus, not just through our words, but also through our actions, or it will mark us out as someone who's not truly turned to Jesus. Someone who's not truly experienced his forgiveness and mercy and grace and then wanted to live that out and reflect it in our lives towards the rest of God's created people. So we need to ask ourselves, who are we trying to impress? If we try to impress other people, then the danger is we make an idol out of our reputation. We feed it and we worship it and we demand that others do the same. And if anyone or anything threatens it, we will destroy them. That's the danger of turning our reputation into an idol. But we should never fool ourselves, because even if we end up with this glowing reputation, it will never be all that we want it to be. Even if we're well thought of when we die at a ripe old age, that reputation will slowly, at best, fade and die as the years pass. And we've all seen, haven't we, how we treat, you know, the great men and women of history. It doesn't take long before their statues are toppled or removed, or their portraits taken down, history is re-evaluated and rewritten through another lens, and the people who thought that they were doing great things for society are dismissed for things that they did in a certain way. I often wonder that, you know, in generations to come, you know, how we'll be viewed for what we've done to the climate and the world. So, reputation on a human level is not going to last, and it's a very fragile thing. But in contrast, God wants us to have a good reputation with Him. A reputation of being a sinner saved by grace. Of being a rebel against Him who knows forgiveness and has forgiven. Of being a compassionate heart that loves as we have been shown love. Of being a child of God who helps all those whom God has created. A reputation for being a true follower of Christ. Because that is the sort of reputation that is more desirable than great riches. And that is better than silver or gold. Because that's a reputation that won't fade and die or be re-evaluated. It is a reputation that will last forever. And never be discredited. Because it's a reputation not built upon ourselves, but built upon Christ alone. So these verses remind us to seek to please God more and to worship ourselves less. Amen.